Recently, I was reading in the prayers that the devatas, the demigods, offered to Lord Krishna in the womb, Garbha Stuti. And one of the opening prayers very much struck me. And that prayer described how the devatas, how the demigods, how they recognized a child within the womb as the unlimited Supreme Lord. Because after all, the child in the womb is in the womb. He's within the material energy, within a material body, and within an enclosure, the womb. But the devatas explained that by the Lord's presence alone, by His presence, they could understand His position by His presence and by His great effulgence. They could understand who He was, that He was not ordinary, but He was extraordinary, unlimitedly extraordinary. He was actually the Supreme Lord. Of course, His effulgence filled the entire prison, but amazingly enough, it didn't go beyond the prison. It filled the prison, but it didn't go beyond. So the devatas understood this person is so extraordinary. So that brings up a question. And to illustrate the question, I will tell you a little story about our Srila Prabhupada. A very short story that in Fiji, in 1976, Srila Prabhupada was in the room of the devotees who had invited him, the Punja family. And he had a way of just sitting and smiling and sitting on his cushions and just leaning back very casually. And he said that in the early days of the movement, we had nothing. And we were in no anxiety. And now, he said, we have so much, but still we have no anxiety. And then he just leaned back and just smiled in his very, very special way, that when you saw Srila Prabhupada smile, that you also smiled, just as many of you just hearing about Prabhupada right now are also smiling. Now, I wanted to bring out a simple point that hearing about Prabhupada, we get a glimpse. We can get a glimpse of this great personality. But it was very different being actually in His presence. Being in Prabhupada's presence was so powerful. And sometimes, I think of it as like a bubble of braja. It's like he carried that with him wherever he was, wherever he went. He carried Vrindavan with him. And then when you entered His presence, you entered that bubble of braja, and it didn't make a difference where you were, where He was, but you experienced this incredible sweetness, and the atmosphere was completely different. So when we hear a little story about Prabhupada, we get a little glimpse of who He was. A little glimpse, but we don't often, unless we are very, very deep ourselves, we don't directly enter into His presence. So here is the difficulty on a day like today, where our duty and our great happiness is to glorify Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are so many well-known stories about him, about his birth. Where was he born? Raise your hands, please. Where was he born? Jagannath Puri. And what happened when his father placed him in front of the Rath cart? What happened? The garland came and he was born with the umbilical cord like a thread, sacred thread around him. And one time he ate mangoes that were not offered, and then he vowed when he was maybe 6 years old or seven or something like that, I will not eat mangoes again for my life. And he never again ate mangoes. So these little stories that we are all familiar with, and how he preached so strongly. And one time Srila Prabhupada, after giving a very, in Mayapur, Srila Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada gave a strong lecture after they invited a very big dignitary in Bengal to speak. And then after he spoke, that dignitary spoke, and he spoke so many ridiculous things as dignitaries who aren't really devotees, they will tend to do. They will sit and speak philosophical confusion. And then Srila Prabhupada spoke just the opposite when he spoke right in front of the dignitary after inviting the dignitary to come. And then Prabhupada spoke the opposite. And then after, he was so happy. And Hari Sori Prabhu relates that Prabhupada went like this. I learned this chopping technique from my Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada said. But yet again, Prabhupada was so much more than a chopping technique. He was so soft and kind, and he carried Vrindavan with him everywhere. So he was so much more than one little story about him. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is similarly so much more than any little pastime that we happen to know about him. When I once had the fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada, in what country? You don't know. Even though I didn't even say it yet, you don't know? In Japan. And I noticed, and there was only a few devotees there, and I noticed that everything he did was so special and so subtle that, practically speaking, my realization at that time was that you could write a book about every day of Prabhupada's life. It was really like that. This was my actual understanding at that time. So I would like now to read something from quite a wonderful book about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami. The book is called Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, His Great Opulences. And it's a three-volume book, and this is just something from the first volume. But you could write a book about every day of this great personality. How he did this, how he did that, and we're able to get a little bit, but that little bit will give us a glimpse of what a fully spiritual personality is like. And a fully spiritual personality, it's a very interesting topic, because guru is very difficult to understand, because he's a person like the deities, like Sisi Gonitai and Sisi Krishna Balaram and Sisi Radhashyamasundar Lalita Vishaka. Very difficult to understand in one sense. Why? Because they are clearly made out of marble. But yet, if you think they are only made out of marble, then you will miss everything. You will miss all their mercy. And it is actually an offense. So Srila Prabhupada, our Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada, they were individuals. They were individuals, yet they were not just individuals. Through them, so much spiritual energy, so much spiritual potency, so much mercy from Krishna, Krishna was manifesting. So these junctures, these connecting points between the spiritual energy and the material energy, they are very subtle and very confusing in the sense of, yes, they have individuality and personality, and yet everything they do is, someone like Srila Prabhupada did, is completely extraordinary. So I would like to read some from about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this is how he interacted while being in two dhams. I don't know how far we'll get. Once in Vrindavan, there was a Vrindavan parikrama. He took the devotees during the month of, what month? Very good. In the month of Kartik. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of devotees he took on around Vrindavan. So please listen. In September 1933, Srila Saraswati Thakur, in the magazine called The Harmonist, there were two issues where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke about the importance of being in the Dham, visiting the Dham with advanced devotees, with advanced devotee, and constantly hearing from him. So this, we know, is a very essential point when touring Vrindavan. In September 1933, Srila Saraswati Thakur took a party of devotees on a tour through Navadvip Dham. And he went, and I'm going, because sometimes Maharaj's English is a little difficult, so sometimes I'll translate it into simple English, so forgive me for that. And on the waterways, he took the devotees on two motor launches, Leela, whose names were Leela, and Suraduni. After its inauguration, the circumambulation of Navadvip was conducted each year by the Gaudiya Math. But the Brajmandal Parikrama occurred only once, from October 9th to the 11th of November in 1932. As they had done for Navadvip Dham Parikrama, devotees worked hard to make the many preparations necessary for a successful Brajmandal Parikrama, such as arranging to transport food, basic medical supplies, fuel for cooking in remote areas, and so on. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur led the group of pilgrims on the 168-mile, about 200 kilometers, say, route. Although such devotional expeditions were regularly conducted by other sects, particularly the Ballava Sampradaya, the Gaudiya Math Parikrama was one of the biggest ever seen in Vrindavan. Everything was done in a grand and wonderful way. The devotees walked in processions headed by the deity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and carried atop an elephant whose name was Kirtan Das, accompanied by horses, a horse, and a police band. Along the way, six camels were purchased to help carry loads. Also present were two of the Gaudiya Math's cars sent from Calcutta by train. As they walked, numerous pilgrims carried flags and they chanted in Kirtan. And for the convenience of the pilgrims who were not from Bengal, because most of the katha was in Bengali, lectures and guidance were given in many languages. Each evening, a small town was set up of almost 100 large tents, was arranged in a semicircle. How do you say semicircle in Hindi? Half a circle. Anyway, like this. Just like when Krishna and when the residents of Vrindavan and Krishna and Balaram, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Maya, when they came across the Yamuna, before they went to Chatikara, actually when they came to Chatikara also they put the wagons in a semicircle. But they set up a small tent, a small village, city, for the night. And in the center were tents for the deity, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, his sannyasis, and other leading devotees. When they stopped in the evening, were not only for resting, but also for kirtan, also for harikatha, for cooking, and finally, the honoring of Mahaprasad. Certain wealthy devotees sponsored feasts for different days, and dozens of gaslights and campfires made a very beautiful scene. Yet, even in this wonderful place of Vrindavan, they had chokidars, because even in Vrindavan, there were dacoits that infested the locality. Srila Saraswati Thakur made concessions for the several participants on the parikrama who were not strong devotees. For instance, although it is enjoined, it is said, that the parikrama must be performed barefoot without shoes because the paths of Brajmandal were full of thorns, Srila Saraswati Thakur allowed the use of rubber-bottom canvas shoes. And tea drinking was permitted for those who had that habit. Yet, so that was all very liberal, but he also made niyam. He forbade participants for taking any fruit or flowers from the trees, or even twigs, the branches of the trees, to be used as toothbrushes. He said, everything in Braja is meant for Krishna's pleasure. The trees are rishis. The trees are sages. Do not disturb them. He chastised some brahmacharis after being informed they had broken off twigs at Rasastali to use as toothbrushes. Raise your hand if you've been to Rasastali at Govardhan. So few devotees. But now there are almost no trees. It's all built up. Even in the early days when we went, we would see kadamba trees, and then there were tamal trees and kadamba tamal. But now almost everything has gone. These sadhus have left. Each day, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had one of the noted kirtaniers among his disciples lead Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, lead Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, beginning Radha Kunda Tate Kunja Kutira, meaning that I will have on the bank of the Radha Kund, I will set up a kunja, a kutir. Because this song, it lists the sights and what one feels in Vrindavan, and therefore they are udipans, they stimulate one's love for Krishna. And throughout each day, he profusely distributed harikatha, often speaking on prayojana tattva, speaking about the highest of truths. So then there is a quotation which is mixed about Radha Tattva, but mixed with philosophy. But I will just read the end of this. There cannot be auspiciousness for those who accept Krishna by their words but refuse to follow Sri Basavanavi. Another category of fools is the deviant so-called Gaudiyas. Without being fully devoted to Gauranga, no one can know Krishna. At that time, Brajmandal, like most of rural India, was materially undeveloped. There were no proper roads, only dirt tracks, and cars were rarely seen. As the party walked through the peaceful village surroundings, Srila Saraswati Thakur described the most important of the innumerable places of Krishna Lila, and he revealed their significance to all the accompanying devotees. Sri Vinod Bihari Brahmachari and others would patrol the parikrama on horseback, keeping the participants in order and coordinating necessary arrangements. Both when the party stopped and also along the way, Brijbasis, including many learned pundits who resided in Brajmandal, they flocked to hear from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He spoke with pundits in Sanskrit. He spoke with the Brijbasis in Hindi. And to the local children, he spoke in very simple Hindi. Parikrama participants were happy by the natural hospitality of the Brijbasi village folks in extending their cordiality, their welcoming pilgrims, parikramis. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur reciprocated by arranging for 3 or 5 truckfuls of various sweets and other Mahaprasadam items to be distributed every day to the Brijbasis. Baskets full of tomatoes, white long muli, guavas, and other fruits and vegetables were carried from village to village. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati personally distributed Mahaprasadam to all with his own hand, both to the young and to the old. He especially liked to feed the Brijbasi children. But if his disciples stretched out their hands to receive Mahaprasadam, he would say, "No, this is not for you." During the parikrama early one morning in Mathura, Srila Saraswati Thakur started speaking to his disciples, beginning by telling them of a saying his Gurudev, that even now he was thinking, it rang in his ears. "Srimati Radharani," he said, "is Kangala, Kangali Nira Thakurani, the mistress of the poor." He further explained that Srimati Radharani is herself the embodiment of freedom from any desire other than to serve Krishna. And she can be attained only by persons who have the same selflessness, that same mood. Anyone who thinks himself the owner of anything cannot have Radha. And without Radha, cannot have Krishna. And that was the mood of Sriman Mahaprabhu, who had the heart of Srimati Radharani. And this is the teachings of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our Srila Prabhupada. And after speaking this Harikatha very spontaneously, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur suddenly said, "Now Krishna is taking the cows to the forest, so come, we will also go." And accompanied by a group of devotees, he set off for Vrindavan, first visiting the Sri Chaitanya Mat he had established there. In the house of a Bengali doctor, He delivered Harikatha to a large group of educated visitors, specifically replying to questions put forward by Sri Satya Charana Guha, a retired attorney from Calcutta who was residing in Vrindavan. Satya Babu suggested that it would be highly beneficial to the Vaishnava world if Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati were to rectify those Vrindavan Babajis who, though lacking legitimate spiritual aspirations, presented themselves as great devotees. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati replied that all Vaishnavas were his gurus, and he did not have the wicked disposition to think of correcting them. One merely posing as a Vaishnava may not be able to change. In other words, if he wasn't a Vaishnava, but just acting as if a Vaishnava, he would not be able to change, perhaps. Yet straightforward and fearless delineation description of the difference between actual Vaishnavas and imitators was required for benefiting genuine truth seekers and the innocent public. Those who deem cheaters as sadhus and Vaishnavas also become implicated in a satsanga. So some very important points here. Satya Babu then related, upon seeing the behavior of so many Babajis, he was unable to develop faith in them. To consider them saintly would be sinful, and it would be further sinful if with such attitude he were to make a show of offering them dandavats and respect. He said that when he intimated these same feelings to one Babaji, Ramakrishna Das Babaji, he was cautioned of his inability to even slightly practice the austerity of the Babajis. So he was chastised a little bit if he said these words to others. And Srila Saraswati Thakur responded by pointing out how asuras like Aga, Baka, and Putana also lived in Braja. And he asked if such association was favorable. Could that be association be favorable for Krishna Bhajan? So then they left and they went to Mathura. When approaching Govardhan Hill, participants were warned not to take any shilas from there. While they were circumambulating, suddenly violent wind and rain threw the pilgrims into chaos. The accompanying panda declared that someone must have made a serious mistake, and that Srila Saraswati Thakur asked if anyone had picked up a Govardhan shila. A member of the group admitted to having done so, and then he replaced the shila, and then the storm immediately stopped. Well, on Brajmandal Prakrama, Srila Saraswati Thakur discovered on the bank of Suryakund the samadhis of Srila Bhagavat Das Goswami and his Gurudev, Sri Madhusadan Das Goswami. And on the bank of Srikund, Surabikund, in Kamyavan, he found the Bhajan Kutir of Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati. And interestingly, there's a footnote here that Srila Saraswati Thakur openly opposed Sri Ramakrishna Das Babaji on several issues. Yet when the Brajmandal Parikram was passing by the ashram of Babaji Maharaj, Srila Saraswati Thakur told participants to go and offer respects to him. So this is amazing characteristics of such a great and realized soul. So there can be philosophical disagreements amongst devotees, but still respect should be given. Seems to be the point that comes out here. At Radhakund, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati lectured before an audience of 500. The adjacent rooftops were packed with people straining to hear, and in the crowd below there was no space even for standing. At one point in the lecture, he began speaking very, very spontaneously about Radha Tattva. Then suddenly, he stopped. He was overcome with ecstasy. And after about 10 minutes, his emotions subsided and he continued speaking. During this visit, the Gaudiya Math Party fed almost 250 Vaishnavas ladu, peda, and kachoris brought from the town of Vrindavan in two cars. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati expressed a desire to construct a major Radha Krishna temple there at Radhakund with eight temples for the Astasakis, the eight principal gopi assistants of Srimati Radharani. So there's a little bit more about Braja, his Braja Mandal Parikrama, but I'd like to read something about his Navadvip Mandal Parikrama. Or pastimes in Sridham Mayapur. It was the day before Janmashtami, approximately 1905. So how many years ago was that? See if you can do it without taking out your mobile phone. Huh? Very good. Almost now 2018 too. Mayapur was flooded and you could only get there by boat. Raise your hand if you've been to Sridhar Mayapur. Oh, very nice. And he was residing, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was residing in Brajapatana, Sri Chaitanya Mat. Srila Saraswati Thakur continued to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra all day and all night. Yet he was feeling dissatisfied that he had not been able to attain milk for offering to the deity of Lord Chaitanya at the Yogapit. Then he chastised himself. Have I thought like this because tomorrow there will be Nirjal Vrata? If so, if I'm thinking like this, so I'll be able to get the Mahaprasadam after. If I'm thinking like, have I thought in this way? He was watching his mind very introspectively. He thought, if I'm thinking like this, this is so wrong of me. And that afternoon, somehow, wading through puddles of mud, a milkman arrived with large quantities of milk, condensed milk, butter, and other dairy products sent by a jamindar named Harinath Chakravarti. After offering everything to the deities, the pujari at the Yogapit brought the Mahaprasadam to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur at Brajapatnam, despite Srila Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's order that the sumptuous dishes offered to Mahaprabhu not be given to him. And after the devotees explained what had happened, that someone just spontaneously came, a milkman, and gave all this boga to offer to Mahaprabhu. Then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went to the yoga pit and apologized to Sriman Mahaprabhu. You inspired someone to send these items just to fulfill my desire. I'm sorry to have put you to so much trouble. Why did I have such an unnecessary thought? So how pure is pure? Anyabhilasita sunyam. How sincere is this person? So sincere that Mahaprabhu could entrust him with so much success, like our Srila Prabhupada, having no desire other than to serve. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's preaching movement gradually swelled, increased, the once seldom visited Sri Chaitanya Math became a bustling outpost. Accordingly, to get the peacefulness he required for writing, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur started to stay more often at Ekayanamat in Hanskali, Hansachetra, a serene spot on the river Chuni, about 30 miles from Mayapur. He ascribed much importance to Hanskali, perceiving that in Satyayuga it had been inhabited by Hansas and was worshipable by pure Vaishnavas for cultivating the Paramhamsa Dharma of accepting only the essence of spiritual knowledge. He desired that a great library be established there and to bring their guru back to where his disciples needed him and simultaneously to facilitate his writing. Kunja Bihari Prabhu had Bhakti Vijay Bhavan built at the southern entrance of Sri Chaitanya Math. Submitting to Kunja Bihari's will, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur shifted there, and he commented, "With a desire to avoid opulence and crowds, considering those may go against my principle of humility, which prompted me to be like a blade of grass and also go against my perseverance, which rooted me in perpetual Hari Bhajan, I changed my residence to the loneliest of possible places. But my most affectionate Kunja Bihari deeply felt that both purposes of life should be served, namely that my constant presence in the Dham be secure and simultaneously my solitude remain undisturbed. Hence he got this building constructed for me by the generosity of Sri Bhakti Vijay. So here I stay at the Garuda Stamba of Sri Chaitanya Math." Srila Saraswati Thakur often remained alone in his room in Bhakti Vijay Bhavan for hours on end, chanting, studying, and writing. When he eventually came out, his disciples would quickly gather around him, eager for his association. Sometimes he would call for the neighboring village children, who were mostly Muslims, and he gave them sweets. And often he sat on the roof terrace, which afforded a vista of the yoga pit, spire towering above the trees in the fields, with the Ganga rushing in the background. Early one morning outside of Bhakti Vijay Bhavan, several pilgrims had gathered by the drain pipe. And after he had bathed, they were jubilantly, very happily sprinkling Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's bath water on their heads. But when he saw that, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not at all happy. From then on, he bathed only in a bathtub, and he ordered his disciples to throw the wash water at a distance so that no one would take his bath water. And one day, while walking from Sri Chaitanya Math to the yoga pit, a disciple accompanying Srila Saraswati Thakur covered his nose with the edge of his dhoti to protect against the fact that the bad smell that came due to people passing in the fields. And Srila Saraswati Thakur smiled and he commented, "This is a transcendental land full of absolute pure spiritual fragrance. Yet you detect only the bad odors of this material world. This divine realm is none different from the Supreme Lord. Do not try to understand it with your material intelligence." Once, Srila Saraswati Thakur came out of Bhakti Vijay Bhavan at around 2 o'clock in the morning. And he called out loudly, "Everyone, look! See over here! Gauranga and Nittai are going on Sankirtan. Follow them! Follow them! Come and see!" All the devotees rushed out, but no one could see them. Maybe if I was there, I would say, "Oh, it's too early. Why? Maybe after, maybe they could come in 2 more hours or something like that." Another time, in the middle of the night, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur woke and said, "Just see! The Panchatattva are going by, chanting and performing Sankirtan. Come, let's follow them." The devotees accompanied their guru into the darkness. But only Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Tirtha Maharaj could see them. Such incidents were not uncommon in the pastimes of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, especially in Nabadweep Dham. One time at Bhakti Bhavan, Bhakti Vijay Bhavan, around midnight, a sound awoke Sevavalas Brahmachari. He arose and he saw Srila Saraswati Thakur walking towards the south, absorbed internally. Seeing him go alone into the deep night, Sevavalas Prabhu thought it wise to follow. And reaching the yoga pit, Srila Saraswati Thakur prostrated in respect. And after proceeding a little further south, he repeatedly cried out, Ha Satchinandana Gaura Hari! And again he offered dandavats. Soon, tumultuous kirtan became audible. They could hear it. And many devotees approached, sounding madangas, kartal, kanchas, and gongs. Srila Saraswati Thakur offered dandavats to them. They reciprocally offered dandavats to him and said, Srila Saraswati Thakur, today we are graced with darshan of the lotus feet of you who are an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya and a most dear manjari of Sri Radha. Glance mercifully upon and favor the lowly souls. By your mercy, that of Sri Gaurasunda and his dham is attained. In humility-laden tones, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied, You are all Vaishnavas of Swetadeep, eternal Gaura Dham Vasis, and servants of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Out of your desire, our only desire is to attain your mercy. Those divine beings offered prayers to Srila Saraswati Thakur and then resumed their kirtan. They offered dandavats before the yoga pit and they cried out, Ha Satchinandana, Ha Gaura Hari, please reveal your dham and your form. Ha Sati Devi, Ha Jagannath Misra, mercifully bestow upon us service to Sri Gaura Hari. After circumambulating the yoga pit temple four times while performing kirtan, they rolled in the dust of the adjacent forecourt of Sati Devi. Then they seated Srila Saraswati Thakur before them, and with their palms joined in respect, they said to him, Srila Saraswati Thakur, you are Sri Gaura Hari's dearest servant, the fulfiller of his manobishtam, his desires. Having heard of your qualities from Lord Chaitanya's topmost associates, we came for darshan at your lotus feet and to hear from you the pastimes enacted by Lord Gaura Hari on this earthly plane. Kindly fulfill our desire. And after begging their blessings to recite, Srila Saraswati Thakur spoke on Gaura Lila as described in the authoritative biographies, enriched with his own realizations and Siddhantic explanations of its intricacies. And he did not stop until the chirping sound of the birds in the dham announced the coming sunrise. Before parting, the residents of Satadip requested Srila Saraswati Thakur to speak Gaura Lila to them every night. Then he and they offered mutual dandavats and returned to their respective abodes. There's maybe just a little more. This section is entitled Dealing with Muslims. The difficulty of living in Mayapur were compounded by a preponderance of many, many illiterate Muslim villages, most of whom were not sure about what they perceived as a Hindu pilgrimage site arising in their ancestral home. They didn't like anything Hindu. Thus, they needed little provoking to become openly hostile. And taking advantage of this charged and unruly political atmosphere, Certain self-interested persons who opposed the declaration of Sri Mayapur as the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya, so people on the other side of the Ganga, they conspired to incite the local Muslims against Srila Siddhanta Saraswati. Although Srila Siddhanta Saraswati had no bad intent towards the design on the Muslims, they became very angry when fed rumors and they who tried to make a riot occur. And they went so far as attempting to send Srila Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's chief assistant to be hung at the gallows. For some time, severe disturbances were caused, but gradually, some truth-seeking Muslims who had faith in Mahaprabhu came to understand the whole situation, and everything became peaceful. Thereafter, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established friendly relationships with the Muslim villages, who held him in high regard. The Muslim landholders often visited him. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur respected them as Damvasis. He especially esteemed the descendants of the Chankazi, who by Lord Chaitanya's blessings were somehow inclined towards Krishna Bhakti. And several Muslims from Mayapur and other parts of Navadvip Dham, although not formally initiated, consider themselves disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati gave Harinam initiation to a Muslim devotee named Kalachanda from nearby Mayapur village, some local gossipers said, "Oh, he cannot become purified." Srila Bhakti Siddhanta then narrated a story. Upon hearing a Muslim villager had been appointed as a judge, some Hindus attempted to downplay his achievement by saying that he could not be possibly getting a salary. Bearing a flag, Kalachanda led the Navadvip Dham Parikrama. So he gave him a position to hold the flag and leading the Parikrama. Eventually, his whole family became Vaishnavas while remaining at home, and his neighbors never troubled them for having accepted Vaishnava Dharma. So he kept up always very, very sweet and natural relationships with the Muslim population who was nearby. Okay, we'll end here. Any simple questions? Yes. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai.
I felt like I didn't quite catch Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's, your understanding of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's mood when. With not wanting to chastise like the fakers in Vrindavan. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on that. You're saying he didn't want to do that, but then maybe there was a little more that I missed.
Yes. Well, the several points come up. One is he's trying to teach his followers that they should look at their own advancement before chastising others and see their own faults before pointing out the faults of others. But yet, on the other side, innocent people will be disturbed and misled by people who have incorrect philosophy. So he disagreed with the philosophy, and he challenged the philosophy and defeated the philosophy, but still he gave respects to the person because they were living in Vrindavan because they were following Mahaprabhu despite their following him faultily. So this is, I think of this as, there's a fine point in here. that we shouldn't become arrogant, but we shouldn't follow false philosophies and false persons. But yet, we should mind our own business and clean our own house as well, and not make it our mission to chastise and correct everyone in the world, what to speak of everyone in Vrindavan, unless that's Krishna has given us that specific service. Is that clearer? So this is a subtle topic and an important topic, and how far our disagreement with devotees go. Devotees who have a somewhat different philosophy or a different mood than our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. So we can challenge the philosophy sometimes. We can keep to our own mood, but we should never disrespect to such a degree that deep enmity enters our own hearts. And what to speak of it moving towards violence. There's a comment about Thakur Haridas. When Thakur Haridas was chastised by the local qazis, they chastised him and beat him for accepting what they thought was a lower religion. So the question could be, well, if someone gives up Krishna consciousness for another religion, might we also not chastise them like that? And then the answer that was given was, it should never come to the point of violence. The disagreements should be philosophical and some practical policies, but it should never come to the point of violence like was performed on Srila Haridas Thakur. So there's some subtleties in there. But yes, but not yet. You can go after this Prabhu who I saw first.
Was going too early, or even he was frustrated about the circumstances. Can you please a little bit speak about that?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada said that he left prematurely because his disciples were fighting over the material facilities that the mat offered. And he was disappointed, said Srila Prabhupada. But I will just say one point on the other side, something that His Holiness Tamal Krishnamaraj told me. He said that Srila Prabhupada told him that you cannot criticize any of my godbrothers. Something like that. So these dealings between these persons and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's criticism of them, they're not so much for me to enter into, but they are for me to learn a lesson from. And the lesson that I am supposed to learn from that is to make sure that I don't take the facilities that my Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada has created and take those and think that they are mine and meant for my pleasure. So that's how I prefer to answer your question. And it's well known that at Radhakunda, Srila Prabhupada heard the instruction from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada, Agni Jalbe, there will be fire in the mat, because he saw this tendency for desiring some position and facility. And Srila Prabhupada also said, for those who want to fight over bricks, Krishna will give them bricks. But for those who want to serve, Krishna will give them service. So that is our most cherished desire, to have that purity of heart where we only want to serve.
Thank you.
Yes, Mataji, she's disappeared. No, I don't mind. I can even show it to you. And if you have your mobile phone, you can even... It's three volumes.
Yes.
Three volumes. This is volume one. Three volumes. This is volume one. Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav.
Thank you so much.
And if you have your mobile phone with you?
I left it home today.
Okay, you can take photo.
Thank you so much.
And then you don't forget. Okay, you can leave. Hare Krishna. Anyone else have any questions or comments? Okay, it's a little hard to understand, so let me just repeat it and make sure I have it right, and so that everyone can understand. It seems to you that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is a little more physically austere than our Srila Prabhupada, and you used the example of the mango.
Yeah, the mango is 64 hours of chanting, right?
No, not 64. Who knows how many? All day and all night. Even more. Yes. So, was there a question attached to that thought?
Yes, can you actually comment on this? Because then sometimes it seems to me that we have austerity described before.
We have?
It seems to me that sometimes in Islam we have austerity, it's hard to follow. So then in comparison to austerity that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati the core was following, and it seems like not
I couldn't hear the last part. It seems like the... Yes. But what is... There's many things I could say, but one is that austerities have value only when they break our attachment. The purpose of austerity is to make our minds stronger and to break our attachment towards sense pleasure. So I would never say that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was more austere than Srila Prabhupada, our Srila Prabhupada, for many reasons. One is our Srila Prabhupada had to deal with us, and that was quite an austerity. Did you ever read the second volume of Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, and the third volume? You should read the more, because he had to deal with all these crazy people to start the Hare Krishna, literally crazy people. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he dealt mostly with cultured individuals, not crazy people. That was one austerity that Srila Prabhupada never complained about at all, and Prabhupada practically never complained about anything. And another thing is he had to manage. Do you know what an austerity it is to manage a spiritual organization? Yeah, just you're fortunate if you can only imagine it and you don't have to do it. And a third austerity is that Prabhupada continuously traveled and preached. Traveled. And at the same time, he didn't sleep. He was continuously preaching, and also he was writing books all night long. I mean, not all night long, but in the middle of the night, because that was the only time he had. He managed, he personally preached, he wrote, he traveled, and he was doing this at such an old age, basically from 70 to 80. You know what the last thing you'll feel like doing between the ages of 70 and 80 is managing, dealing with crazy people, all the things that Prabhupada was doing. It's a time where you want to sit back in a soft chair and just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But Prabhupada's mood was such service. And then the movement grew so much. So with the blessings that came with that, was the curse of being out of control, practically speaking, having to deal with so many things. And yet Prabhupada always wrote, and he was always encouraged his so many disciples. He was always very personal in dealing with the devotees that he had a personal relationship with, or anyone who came to see him, practically speaking. So in one sense, I don't generally think of that as austerity. I just think of this incredibly soft, detached from matter Vaishnava heart that Srila Prabhupada had. But now that you mention it, what an austerity. One time I had the fortune of being with him on a plane, aeroplane, going from Fiji to Hawaii in the middle of the night. And this image really stayed in my mind. So the plane wasn't full. It was almost empty. And we had, you know, the opulence. When your good fortune arises, when you're on an airplane, there's no one sitting on either side of you. This is like, you know, God's grace is on you. So in the middle of the night, I was lying down like that. I think my head was towards the aisle. And suddenly, I just woke up. And Prabhupada was walking, probably to the restroom. He was just walking. So I said, and when he was just so, he was like glowing. Wasn't glowing, but he was just in this bubble of Vrindavan. And I just said, Prabhupada, you know, can I assist you with anything? And he just looked at me in the softest way, and he said, no, it's all right. Such a simple exchange in the very, very soft light of the aeroplane in the middle of the night, and Prabhupada just walking by. And you didn't know that he was in any way inconvenienced or anything like that, but it was just such a soft, personal, intimate exchange that in the telling of it maybe doesn't even mean anything because it was just so simple what had happened, but it was just so sweet. It was just so endearing and so much Prabhupada. He was so dutiful and so dedicated to following the order of his Guru Maharaj and bringing the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna consciousness, and Sri Vrindavan, Sita Mayapur, Mahaprabhu's mercy to the whole world. So when one is dedicated to any service with a full heart, then so many austerities will come. Because to do any service with a full heart in itself is the perfect perfection of all austerity. That's how one way I could answer your question, your comment, really. Okay. One last question. Oh, one other little story that I was talking about austerity. Oh, never mind. Go ahead.
We hear in past time that how Srila Thakur chanted 1 billion names before he started preaching. So, is it some lesson for us that really some purification, not chanting something, going preaching service?
So the question is, do we need purification before preaching service? He was chanting, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was chanting, but he never completed that vrata because the Panchatattva came and ordered him to go out and preach. Yes? You know that part? Yeah. So you already have your order. But the purification is by continuing. Sometimes the devotees ask, and actually I heard one devotee actually ask His Holiness Kavi Chandra Maharaj a few days ago in class, how do you become humble? So he said, do book distribution, or then he said, any service. And I tend to emphasize any service. You don't be so eager to become humble, just be patient. The material world is completely organized to remove your pride and give you so many austerities, which really, austerities really come from the mental platform where the mind says, no, I don't want to do it, and then you have to do it anyway with the strength of your Krishna consciousness. So just to preach and continue preaching will give you all the austerities that you need. And it will make you fit to actually be powerful in preaching. Because the power in preaching comes from blessings more than anything else. Not from austerity, but from blessings. The austerities maybe will attract mercy, blessings. So I remember one devotee wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, Krishna consciousness, realization of Krishna, and I'll end here, is higher than Brahman realization. So maybe I should become Brahman realized first, and then I'll come back and take up Krishna consciousness. And you know what Prabhupada's answer was? Are you chanting your rounds? And the answer was, and the person wasn't, of course. So just follow the order of see Guru and Gauranga in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself, that's Nokia telling us that class is over, thinking incapable of preaching, I don't have the power to preach, but on my order, Amara Gai Guru Hai Tare Desh, and then go out with a humble heart as a servant. Srila Prabhupada ki jay, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jay, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jay, Sisi Gonatai ki jay, Sisi Krishna Balaram ki jay, Sisi Radha Shyama Sundara Lalita Vishakha Devi ki jay, Nitai Gaur Pribhanam ki jay.